Housing costs have skyrocketed in many places, and some lawmakers, state and local, think a solution is rent control. In Nevada, a bill would bar landlords from raising rents the first year, and then limit hikes to 5% a year. Boston could also limit annual hikes. And there's a debate in Hoboken, New Jersey, over how rent control there should work. But does rent control improve affordability in the long run? Economics professor Rebecca Diamond has looked into that question. She's at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, and she joins us now. Rebecca, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
So the idea behind rent control, of course, is that at the whim of a landlord, a tenant could be priced out if the rent keeps going up. So these rules are meant to stabilize rent. But you were part of a study suggesting that in the long run, it actually drove up rents. Can you just explain how did that happen in San Francisco, where you were part of the study?
Sure. So we looked at a law change in the mid-90s that expanded the scope of rent control. So prior to 1994, only large apartment buildings were subject to rent control, and then they expanded access of rent control to smaller multifamily apartment buildings, like 2 to 4 unit buildings. And we were able to track over time how the tenants who lived in those buildings migrated, how much they benefited from rent control, and also how the properties and buildings changed over time, so how the landlords responded to rent control. So we see this big trade-off between the short-term and the long-term effects. In the short run, those initial renters that live in those properties when rent control comes in seem to benefit by getting access to lower rents. They're less likely to get displaced from San Francisco.
They stayed longer. They didn't have to move, all of those things.
Exactly. But in the long run, where landlords can try to think about re-optimizing the use of their real estate, I mean, not surprisingly, if you tax landlords, you make the return on renting a lot lower. They think about alternative things they could do to more profit from owning that property. And that's exactly what we see. So over time, you see properties getting converted to condo. You see properties getting sold to owner occupants, because in the owner market, there's no rules on what prices you can sell for. You just sell for the market price.
Yeah.
So you see this switch of declining supply of rental housing and switching to supply of owner housing, owner occupied housing. And that decline in rental supply over, you know, about 15 years or so, you lose about 25% of the rent-controlled housing stock to these alternative uses.
Oh, wow.
Meaning that if there's less supply of housing to go around, then new renters, not those initial renters that are living there when the law changed, but new renters, say the people that are growing up and moving out of their parents' house or moving to San Francisco for other reasons, they're going to face a much more constrained housing stock in the rental market. And that means that the upfront price of housing is going to go up. So we see rents are actually higher in the long run because upfront rents are not regulated by rent control. It's just rental price increases. Then you pay more upfront because there's just less housing and there are more people competing for a smaller amount of housing.
Yeah. So this dynamic that you found in San Francisco, that there was less inventory for rent over time, and so the rents went up. Is this something you would imagine would happen in other places? As you know, states and cities, some are thinking of putting in rent control policies. And I guess more broadly, is this rent control issue frequently studied?
So, I mean, every rent control law is a little bit different. So I don't know exactly if they structured their rent control in a completely different way, whether it would play out exactly the same as in San Francisco. But my guess is that San Francisco is a pretty tightly regulated housing market. So even in San Francisco, in a city that makes it very hard to, say, convert your units to condos or change your property in any kind of meaningful way, landlords were still able to and working hard to do that. So in markets potentially that are more fluid and allow the housing stock to reoptimize with less government oversight, it might even be stronger of an effect and you might even lose more rental housing.
So for these jurisdictions that are now asking the question of whether to pass rent control measures, would you warn them to be careful that this could likely backfire?
So it's a short-run, long-run trade-off. Potentially, you might, you know, be tempted by those short-run benefits. You have to remember the long run is, you know, important as well. But I don't want to necessarily come down and say what the solution of rent control, like, so rent control is trying to solve a problem of getting displaced from your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And providing insurance against displacement in terms of rental affordability, that doesn't sound like a crazy government policy or a crazy government goal to say we want to help stabilize you in terms of facing future rent increases. But the question is, do we want to put the full cost burden of raising the revenue effectively to pay for that insurance on this small group of landlords and say, you know, collectively as a society, we want to stabilize rents in neighborhoods that you could afford in the past. We want to keep you able to afford them in the future. Why are we forcing this tax only on landlord? Why don't we share that more broadly through maybe some kind of property tax? And then you could, you know, fund rental subsidies to low-income people in neighborhoods that are appreciating a bunch. Rent control right now is a very blunt instrument. It gives it the same rental subsidy to high-income people and low-income people. Low-income people tend to move much more frequently than high-income people. So if anything, it's a regressive tax that's going to disproportionately benefit higher-income renters that don't move as often.
So I guess when you then think about broader policy options, you mentioned, you know, perhaps, you know, subsidies in places where rents are high, or to subsidize it to make it more affordable to people in certain places. Are there other policy options that you think might work better than rent control?
So I think governments have to be willing to take on the goal of stabilizing rents to low-income people in neighborhoods that are appreciating. And it's very tempting to just decree a regulation to say you can't raise your rents, because that, from a government budget perspective, doesn't actually cost them any dollars. It's forcing the funding on landlords. But if you were to fund it explicitly through some kind of tax system that formally went through the government as a social insurance program, just like we do for like unemployment insurance, then the government has a lot more ability to target those funds at people who need it the most. You could actually means test it based on your income and not just say it's for everyone and the landlords have to fund the full cost. So wanting to stabilize people's rents in gentrifying or appreciating neighborhoods could be a very desirable government goal. But doing it through just declaring rents not going up and then not putting any dollars and cents from the government to solve this problem efficiently seems like a very costly and inefficient way to attack it.
We've been talking to Rebecca Diamond of Stanford. She's done research on the impact of rent control policies. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for having me.